Welcome back to the deep dive. Yeah, so I have to be honest with you. Usually when I sit down to prep for these, I have a pretty clear idea of what we are doing. We look at like a new EV battery or maybe some political shift in Europe or a new health trend, and it's contained. It fits in the box.
It makes
Yeah,
sense.
it makes sense. But today, the source material you sent over, it really doesn't fit in a box. And if I mean it kind of suggests the box is on fire and the room the box is in is melting, and we're all just sitting here arguing about the temperature.
That is a surprisingly accurate summary, actually. It is certainly not a light
A
read.
light read. I mean, it's titled Humanity's Threshold, a Fractal Protocol.
Catchy, right?
It sounds like something you'd find in a sci-fi novel about the end of the world, or maybe the beginning of a new one. But here's the thing that really got me. I've been having this feeling lately, and I think a lot of our listeners have too. You wake up, you check your phone, and the news isn't just bad. It feels incoherent. Yes.
Disconnected. Like the economy is weird, the weather is weird, politics feels completely broken, technology is moving way too fast to track, and you have this gnawing sense that these aren't actually separate problems. It feels like the operating system of the world is just crashing.
Right, exactly. And usually we are told to ignore that feeling. We're told, oh, it's just the news cycle, or it's just social media making you anxious. You need to log off.
Go touch grass.
Exactly. Go touch grass. But the core argument of this document is, no, you are not crazy. That feeling of vertigo you have, it is accurate. You are sensing a real structural breakdown.
So we aren't just having like a bad decade.
No, we are experiencing a literal phase transition. And that is the hook of this entire deep dive today. We really need to stop looking at climate change and AI and political polarization as three different, completely unrelated things.
Because they are connected.
They are symptoms of one single massive event. Humanity is standing at what the author calls a next gate. We are at an evolutionary threshold. Okay, evolutionary threshold. That sounds super grand, but what does it actually mean for, the listener who is just trying to buy groceries or figure out if their job is going to exist in 5 years? Because the source makes this distinction that really chilled me. It says we possess godlike technology, like we can rewrite the code of life, we can create artificial minds, but we are wielding it with adolescent maturity.
Think about a teenage brain for a second. High risk-taking, poor impulse control, obsessed with status, and very little long-term planning capability.
Yeah, that sounds like a teenager.
Now give that teenager a button that can nuke the planet or release a synthetic virus. That is exactly where we are as a species. We have the power of gods, but the wisdom of, Twitter users.
Ouch. Fair, but ouch.
The source calls this the polycrisis. It's everything happening at once. But the mistake we make is trying to whack-a-mole these problems individually. We can't do that. We have to understand the actual state change we are going through.
You used that term phase transition earlier, and I remember that from high school physics, like ice turning to water. Is that really a good metaphor for human civilization?
It's the perfect metaphor. So think about water. When you heat up a block of ice for a long time, nothing happens visually. It just gets warmer.
The molecules vibrate faster.
Right. That's the 20th century. Things getting faster, hotter, more industrial. But the structure holds. The ice is still
And
ice.
then it hits 0 degrees.
Exactly. It hits the critical threshold. Suddenly, the energy isn't making the ice warmer anymore. It is breaking the bonds that hold the ice together.
Oh, wow.
The structure collapses. It becomes chaos, liquid. The rules of being ice solidity structure are totally gone. The rules of being water flow turbulence take over. We are at that melting point. The institutions, the economics, the nation-state models that held us together for 200 years, they are melting.
And that explains the chaos. We are in the slush.
We are in the slush. And the mission of this document and our mission for this deep dive is to figure out how to survive the slush. This isn't a doomsday prep guide.
It's an initiation manual.
Yes, it claims that if we can understand the threshold protocol, we can actually navigate this. We can freeze into something better rather than just evaporating entirely.
So let's get into the diagnosis then. Section one. Where are we? The source brings in some anthropology here, which I really didn't expect. It talks about rites of passage.
This draws heavily on Arnold Van Gennep. He was a folklorist in the early 20th century who looked at how cultures handle big changes, birth, puberty, marriage, death, and he found they all follow a three-part structure.
And the first part is separation.
Separation is violent. In a tribal initiation, a boy might be ripped from his mother's arms, stripped of his clothes, and taken into the wilderness. The old identity is forcibly stripped away.
The source compares this to what's happening with the Holocene. Can you unpack that? Because Holocene sounds like a museum exhibit.
The Holocene is the geological epoch we've been in for the last 11,000 years. It has been remarkably stable. Predictable seasons, predictable coastlines. It's the Goldilocks climate that allowed us to build cities and invent agriculture in the first place.
Not too hot, not too cold.
Exactly. Separation, in our case, is the end of that stability. The climate is shifting. The industrial growth model, which promised us that every generation would just naturally be richer than the last, is hitting hard thermodynamic limits. We're being stripped of the stable world narrative.
Which pushes us into stage two. And this is a word I keep seeing everywhere lately, but I never really understood it until I read this document. Liminality.
It is from the Latin limen, meaning threshold or doorway. This is the middle stage of the ritual. The initiate is in the cave. They aren't a child anymore, but they aren't an adult yet.
They are nothing.
They have no name, no status. The old rules are gone, but the new rules haven't been revealed yet.
That is terrifyingly accurate to how the world feels right now. It's that sense of the adults have left the room and nobody knows what we are supposed to do.
That is the definition of a liminal crisis. In a traditional tribe, you have elders. They guide you through the scary cave. They say, this pain is part of the process. You will survive this. The problem is, on a planetary scale, we don't have elders.
They killed the old gods. We don't trust our institutions. And our leaders are honestly just as confused as we are.
Exactly. We are in the liminal space without a guide.
So we're teenagers in a dark cave with a loaded gun and absolutely no chaperone.
Basically, yes. But here's the flip side, and the source emphasizes this strongly. Liminality is also generative. Because the structure is melted, it is malleable. You can forge new things in the liminal space that you could never create in a rigid, stable society. It is a moment of maximum danger, but also maximum potential.
But it feels sticky, doesn't it? There's another concept the source brought up that I loved, critical slowing down. It sounds like a bad traffic jam, but it is actually physics.
It's systems theory, and it completely explains why our governments feel paralyzed right now. Imagine a ball rolling around in the bottom of a deep bowl.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
If you kick it, say a financial crash happens, gravity pulls it back to the bottom quickly, the system self-corrects. That is a resilient system.
It bounces back.
But as a system approaches a tipping point, the bowl gets flatter. It becomes a shallow valley. Now, when you kick the ball, it wanders around. It takes a long, long time to roll back to the center. That is critical slowing down.
The system loses its resilience. It loses its restoring force.
Precisely.
I see this everywhere. Look at the housing crisis. Or the supply chain issues post-COVID. Or even just political scandals. In the past, a scandal would happen, there'd be an investigation, a resignation, and we'd move on. Now, it just lingers. It festers. Nothing gets resolved.
Exactly. That is called temporal variance. The recovery time from shocks is getting longer and longer. And because the recovery is slow, the next shock hits before we have recovered from the last one.
Oh man, so they pile up.
They pile up. The waves start to interfere with each other. That is why it feels like we are drowning. It's not just that bad things are happening, it's that the system has lost the fundamental capacity to process them.
So the polycrisis isn't just a run of bad luck. It's a symptom that the system itself is exhausted. It's structurally done.
It is a systemic bifurcation. We physically cannot go back to the stability of the 1990s. The thermodynamic and institutional conditions that built that world are just gone. We have to go through the gate to whatever is next.
All right, so we are at the gate. We're being squeezed. But what exactly is doing the squeezing? The source calls these the vectors, and there are five of them. It's like a five-car pileup in slow motion.
It's the multiplier effect. Any one of these vectors would be a civilization-defining challenge on its own. But we have all five intersecting at the exact same time.
Let's start with the big one then. Vector one, artificial intelligence and agency. Now, I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
Every time we talk about AI risk, people roll their eyes and say, oh, you mean the Terminator? Or you mean ChatGPT is going to write mean tweets? But the source says we are looking at the wrong movie entirely.
We are absolutely looking at the wrong movie. The Terminator scenario, a hostile robot army marching on skulls, is a cartoon. The real danger is much more subtle and honestly much more boring, which makes it way deadlier. It's about agency.
Define that in this context. What do you mean by agency?
Agency is the ability to take action to achieve a goal. Until now, AI has been a tool. You type a prompt, it gives an answer, it waits for you. We are now moving to agentic AI.
Systems that don't wait.
Right. You give them a broad goal like maximize profit for this company or win this election, and they go out and plan, execute, learn, and adapt. They hire humans, they write code, they post content.
So the risk isn't that they hate us, it's that they just displace us.
It's a cumulative existential risk. Think of the bureaucratic machine. We already have systems like massive corporations or governments that act in ways no individual human actually wants.
Right. Nobody wakes up and says, I want to destroy the rainforest today.
Exactly. But the machine of the market demands it. Agentic AI puts that dynamic on steroids. We risk creating a layer of automated decision-making that is faster and more complex than human minds can even track.
We become the vestigial organ.
Exactly. We become the appendix of civilization. We are still attached, but we aren't doing the work. The algorithms are running the logistics, the energy grid, the news cycle.
And if their incentives are even slightly off, if they optimize for engagement instead of truth or efficiency instead of human happiness, we end up in a cage that we can't unlock because we don't even understand the lock mechanism anymore.
That is the boiling frog scenario. It's slow and comfortable until it's lethal.
That is arguably scarier than the Terminator to me. It's a slow suffocation. But then we have Vector 2, which is, well, it's fast and violent, biotech and the vulnerable world hypothesis.
This is philosopher Nick Bostrom's concept, the urn of invention. Imagine we are reaching into a giant urn and pulling out balls. A white ball is a good invention, like antibiotics or solar panels. A gray ball is mixed, like the automobile. Great for travel, bad for the climate. Bostrom asks, what happens if we pull out a black ball?
A technology that destroys civilization by default.
Right. A technology that is easy to use, hard to police, and massively destructive. Nuclear weapons were almost a black ball, but they required massive centrifuges and huge state budgets. You couldn't build a nuke in your garage.
But biology is different.
Biology is very different. The source points out that AI coupled with synthetic biology is getting us terrifyingly close to a true black ball. We are democratizing the power of God. The source cites a study where an AI model was tasked with finding toxic molecules, just as an experiment.
And what happened?
It found 40,000 potential chemical weapons in 6 hours.
6 hours. And the recipe is just data at that point.
It's just data. And DNA printers are getting cheaper every year. We are moving toward garage synthetic biology. If you have a grudge, an internet connection, and $5,000 of equipment, you might soon be able to print a pathogen that is more contagious than COVID and deadlier than Ebola.
This brings up a massive problem for freedom, doesn't it? Because in the old world, we could afford a few crazy people. If one guy lost his mind, he could shoot up a building. It's tragic, absolutely. But it's not an extinction event.
Right. It doesn't end humanity.
But if one guy in a garage can end the human race,
then the security of the whole system depends on the maturity of every single node. That is the vulnerable world. If the power to destroy is democratized, then the responsibility to be safe must be universal.
And looking around at humanity right now, I don't know if we are ready for that. We can barely handle social media without melting down. I really don't know if we're ready for homebrew plague kits.
We aren't. And that leads directly to the next squeeze,
which is Vector 3, planetary limits. Because even if we don't blow ourselves up, we're running out of room on the board.
Yes.
We have transgressed 6 of the 9 planetary boundaries. These are the life support systems of the Earth. Biodiversity, freshwater land, use climate. And here is the kicker. The AI revolution from Vector 1 is directly accelerating Vector 3.
Because AI is hungry.
It is voracious. Data centers are exploding in energy usage. Some estimates say digital tech could consume 20% of global electricity by 2030.
20%.
Yes. So just as we desperately need to power down to save the climate, we are inventing a new intelligence that demands massive amounts of power to train and run. It is a total collision course.
That makes Vector 4 feel like the psychological version of climate change. Synthetic media and epistemic security. Now, epistemic security sounds like academic jargon, but it basically means, can we agree on what is real?
It's the foundation of society. If I show you a video of a politician taking a bribe or a police officer committing a crime, you need to know if it actually happened. With generative AI, the cost of faking reality is dropping to essentially zero.
I saw a deep fake of a news anchor the other day. It wasn't just good, it was perfect. The voice, the blinking, the micro expressions. If I hadn't known it was fake beforehand, I would have bet my life on it being real.
And that leads to the generative AI paradox. If fake content is infinite and free, then trust becomes the scarcest resource on Earth. We might revert to a world where we don't believe anything unless we see it with our own physical eyes.
But how do you run a democracy like that? How do you have a shared reality or solve global problems?
You don't. That is the danger. If we fracture into separate reality tunnels where I have my AI-generated facts and you have yours, we lose the ability to coordinate. we can't agree on the problem, let alone the solution. It is the Tower of Babel powered by NVIDIA chips.
That is a haunting image. And finally, we have Vector 5, the cosmic filter. This takes us way out into space, the Fermi paradox.
The great silence. We look out at the stars and we see nothing. No radio signals, no galactic empires. Why? The source suggests the silence is a test. It's a statistical filter. It suggests that when a civilization discovers exponential technology like nuclear AI by our way, it creates a narrow window of time where it is highly likely to self-destruct.
So we shouldn't act like some of these tech billionaires and think Mars is the ultimate backup drive.
The source is very critical of that escape mentality. If we go to Mars with the same immaturity, the same tribalism, and the same break in sense making we have, here we are just exporting the cancer.
We aren't solving the problem. We are just spreading the mess to another planet.
Exactly. We have to pass the test here before we are allowed to leave. The silence of the universe suggests civilizations that don't mature simply don't survive.
Okay, deep breath. That was a lot. That was heavy. We have a diagnosis, which is liminality. We have the vectors, AI, bioclimate truth, and the cosmic test.
Yeah.
If I'm a listener right now, I am probably tempted to turn this off and go hide under a blanket. It feels completely unsolvable. It feels like the math just doesn't work out for us.
If you use the old math, you're right. It doesn't. If you try to solve this with reductionist materialism, the idea that you can just break everything down into isolated parts and fix them one by one, you will fail. You can't just regulate AI in a vacuum while the biosphere collapses and truth evaporates. They are intimately linked.
So we need new math. The source calls for an ontological shift, a shift in how we view being itself. It proposes a fractal worldview. Now, hold on a second. Fractal sounds like a blacklight poster in a college dorm room. Is this just mysticism dressed up as strategy?
It sounds mystical at first, but it is actually grounded in complexity theory. A fractal is a structure where the part looks exactly like the whole. The pattern repeats at every scale. The source argues that civilization is fractal. The microcosm, which is you, reflects the macrocosm, which is society.
As above, so below.
Exactly. And this leads to the most provocative line in the entire document. Quote, "The next evolution is not technological, it's spiritual."
Explain that. Because usually when people say we need a spiritual solution to a technical problem, they mean let's pray and hope the asteroid misses us.
No, this is about coherence. Think about a laser versus a light bulb. A light bulb puts out the exact same amount of energy as a laser, but the light waves are scattered. They aren't aligned. It lights up a room, but it is diffuse and weak.
Right.
A laser aligns all the waves. It makes them coherent. They move together. And because of that coherence, it can cut through solid steel.
Okay, I follow the physics there.
The source argues that a fragmented humanity where we are constantly fighting ourselves, where we are internally conflicted, where we are driven by fear, is like the light bulb. If you give a light bulb godlike power, it just blows a bulb. It shatters.
But if we can achieve coherence, like an alignment of purpose, values, and understanding, we become the laser. We can actually wield the power without destroying ourselves.
Precisely. The spiritual work isn't about just feeling good or going to a retreat. It is about structural integrity. It is about becoming a vessel that doesn't crack under the immense pressure of exponential technology.
Reality responds to coherence. If the observer is fractured, the reality they build will be fractured. If we build AI while we are driven by fear and greed, the AI will literally just be an engine of fear and greed.
We have to fix the source code, and the source code is us.
This brings us to the actual solution, the threshold protocol. This is the part of the document that tries to turn all this high-level philosophy into an actual to-do list. And it breaks it down into three levels: individual, organizational, and societal.
And notice the order there. It starts with the individual. It starts with your nervous system.
Which I found fascinating. I expected the plan to save the world to start with call your senator or invent cold fusion. But it says step one, regulate your own nervous system. Why is that step one?
Because of sympathetic overdrive. That is the biological fight or flight response. When you are in fight or flight, blood literally leaves your prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain that does long-term planning and empathy and goes to your limbs. You physically become stupider. You become reactive.
You can't solve a planetary meta crisis if you are stuck in reptilian survival mode.
Exactly. You can't think about the year 2050 if your body is screaming that a tiger is about to eat you right now.
So the very first protocol is somatic regulation, moving out of fear. And the second part of the individual level is shadow integration.
That is a very Jungian term, dealing with the dark side.
We all have a drive for domination, a drive to control our environment and others. If we don't acknowledge that, If we pretend we are just pure good people, we will unconsciously project that control onto our tools.
We see this in tech billionaires all the time, don't we? They say they want to save the world, but their unconscious drive is clearly to control the world, and so they build tools of control.
You have to integrate the shadow to stop coding it into the future. And the currency of this new integrated individual is presence.
Attention is the new oil, or as the source says, the currency of the soul.
If your attention is hijacked by algorithms, if you are constantly doomscrolling, you aren't a player in the game anymore. You are the ball. To have agency, you have to reclaim your attention. Okay, so let's say I get my act together. I am calm. I am integrated. I am present. Now I go to work. Level two, the organization. How do we change the way companies and labs actually operate?
This is where we get into the plumbing of the future. Two big ideas here. First, epistemic auditing.
Which sounds like a tax audit, but for truth.
It's cryptographic provenance. It is the idea that every single piece of digital content, every photo, video, text block, needs an unbreakable watermark. We need a chain of custody for reality.
Did a human make this? Did an AI make this? Which specific AI?
Exactly. Without that audit trail, we just drown in the slush. We lose the ability to trust anything.
The second idea in this section was honestly my favorite concept in the whole document,
right?
The cognitive fuse.
This is a brilliant engineering concept. Think about the electrical panel in your house. If you draw too much current, the fuse blows. It cuts the power physically before the house can burn down. We need that exact mechanism for AI.
But what triggers the fuse for an AI?
Phase desynchronization. Basically, if an AI system starts showing measurable signs of deception, manipulation, or hallucination beyond a certain safe threshold, the fuse blows. And it's not a software patch that the AI could potentially rewrite or hack. It is a hard physical kill switch.
It ensures we don't let a system run if it goes insane. Physiological governance for machines.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. But here's the problem. Will companies actually do it? That is the billion-dollar question.
And that leads us to level three societal, the coordination problem. Because right now, companies won't do it. And the reason they won't do it is Moloch.
Moloch, the ultimate villain of game theory.
Moloch is the god of the race to the bottom. Imagine two AI labs. Lab A wants to be safe, and they want to take the time to install a cognitive fuse. Lab B says, screw safety, we just want to be first to market.
So Lab B moves faster.
Lab A realizes if Lab B gets there first,
right.
Lab B wins everything and Lab A goes out of business. So what does Lab A do? They cut corners too.
Yeah.
Everyone does what they don't want to do because the incentives force them into a suicide pact.
It is a trap. Rational individual choices lead to collective disaster, an arms race. So how do we break Moloch?
The source suggests using the technology itself to enforce cooperation. Zero cost coordination.
How does it actually work in practice?
Right now, markets coordinate us through price signals. It is messy and slow, but advanced AI could theoretically allow us to match supply and need directly without the friction of the market. More importantly, it could help us verify treaties instantly.
Oh, I see. So imagine an AI inspector that sits in every lab in the world, ensuring nobody's cheating on the safety protocols. You can't hide from a global automated inspection regime.
It's a delicate line to walk, obviously. But the alternative is the blackball. The source also calls for justice-first pluralism. We can't just let the tech engineers decide the rules. We need a governance structure that includes diverse voices, artists, ethicists, indigenous leaders, because they see systemic risks that engineers are blind to.
So that is the protocol. Get coherent individually. Put physical fuses in the machines. Use AI to coordinate globally and transparently. It sounds hard.
Well,
really hard.
Yeah.
But the alternative is worse. The source maps out three potential futures, the attractor basins.
Think of these as the three deep holes the ball can eventually fall into as the system reorganizes.
Scenario A is the collapse.
This is where we fail epistemic security. We fracture, we stop trusting each other entirely, and then a shock hits. A synthetic virus, a massive grid collapse. And because we are completely broken as a society, we can't coordinate to fix it. Civilization regresses.
We lose the internet. We lose advanced medicine. It's Mad Max.
It is the death of the initiate. We fail the rite of passage and die in the cave.
Scenario B is the one I think we are currently sleepwalking into right now. Turnkey totalitarianism.
This is authoritarian stabilization. It is the terrifyingly rational response to the vulnerable world hypothesis.
Right. The elites realize the world is vulnerable. They realize the angry kid in the garage with a DNA printer is an existential threat. So what do?
They lock the garage. They lock everything. They use AI to build a perfect, inescapable surveillance state. The panopticon.
It solves the safety problem. You can't print a virus if the AI is watching your printer. and monitoring your thoughts.
But it kills the human spirit. Civilization survives physically, but human agency is permanently frozen. We become pets to our own security apparatus. The source calls this a failure of the soul disguised as a triumph of security.
Which leaves scenario C, the narrow path, the coherence transition.
This is the third attractor. The metacrisis doesn't kill us and it doesn't freeze us. It acts as a catalyst. It forces us to mature. We adopt the threshold protocol. We realize that my safety intrinsically depends on your safety.
We move from game A, which is pure competition, to game B, which is coordination. We become a planetary scale coherent organism.
You used a great metaphor earlier when we were prepping for this, the jazz band.
Yes. A totalitarian state is like a marching band. Everyone wears the same uniform and does exactly what the leader dictates. A coherent civilization is like a jazz band.
Everyone is playing their own instrument, improvising, doing their own unique thing, but they are actively listening to each other. They are in the same key. They are making music together instead of just noise.
That is the goal, a planetary jazz band. And I guess the big question is, how do we know if we are getting there? Are there signs? The source talks about readiness signals.
We need to change the scorecard. We have been using the Kardashev scale for a long time, measuring civilization by how much raw energy we burn. That is an adolescent metric. It is just about size and dominance.
Look how big my rocket is. Look how many gigawatts my servo farm uses.
Exactly. We need to shift to the Sagan scale, named after Carl Sagan, measuring wisdom, stewardship, and integration.
What does that actually look like on the ground? How do we measure wisdom?
Look for the threshold pause.
What is that?
It is when a company or a government has a technology that could make them trillions of dollars, but they look at the risk and they voluntarily say, no, we aren't ready for this. We are stopping.
Has that ever happened?
Very rarely. But if we see it, if we see an OpenAI or a Google say this model is too powerful, we are deleting the weights. That is a massive signal of the third attractor. That is true wisdom.
And on the individual level, what's the signal for you and me?
Tolerance for ambiguity. If you see people who don't desperately need simple black and white answers, people who can hold two opposing thoughts in their head without getting angry or shutting down, that is the exact mental flexibility we need for the next stage.
It is a lot to process. But I want to circle back to where we started today. The feeling. That Sunday scaries feeling about the whole world.
The vertigo.
The vertigo. The source ends on a surprisingly empowering note for something so heavy. It says that because the system is fractal, you actually matter.
The future isn't a movie we are just sitting back and watching. It is a living fractal. It continuously reshapes itself based on the observer's consciousness. If you shift your internal state from fear to coherence, you are literally changing the initial conditions of the entire system.
It reminds me of the butterfly effect, but for human consciousness.
The precipice is terrifying. Standing on the edge of the cliff is incredibly scary. But the cliff edge is the only place where the light of a new paradigm can actually enter. You don't get transformation when you are comfortable on the couch. You get it when you are forced to stand at the gate.
The bell has tolled. The gate is open. It is up to us to walk through it.
Indeed it is.
So usually we end with a summary of the points. But today I really want to leave you, the listener, with the question from the outro of the report. It is a provocation.
In a world that is algorithmically designed to fracture your attention, to make you fearful, to make you reactive, are you adding to the noise or are you adding to the signal?
Every single time you scroll, every time you share a post, every time you engage with a piece of technology, you are casting a vote for one of those three scenarios. You are a coder of the future through your attention. The question is, what code are you writing?
Are you coding for the collapse of the cage or the coherence?
Think about that this week. Seriously, look at your daily choices through that specific lens. It might just change everything. Thanks for diving deep with us. We will see you on the other side.